Okay, hopefully my phone won't die. I guess I'll stand here so I'm closer.
Oh my
gosh.
Can we charge it up?
No, it's okay. Okay, so last week we talked, 2 weeks ago we talked about lots of different things. Perhaps we'll review at the end, but I think we have less to talk about this week, so that's good. And we'll try to take questions at the end, unless there's questions on exactly what we're talking about in the middle. So last week we talked about, very briefly, Bishul De'oraita, the Torah prohibition of cooking. We talked about what you have to do to the food if you are putting it on the fire, on the blech, in the oven before Shabbat. We talked about and all the permutations of that. We talked about, it's called Shehiya. We talked about Chazara or Hafzara, same thing, different, an added hay. That is if you go ahead and have the food on a flame fire source, right? For example, but this you need to have a blech, so let's say you had it on a blech, or you had it on an electric hot plate, and now you went ahead and want to take it off, use it quickly, and put it back on. And then finally, we talked about hanacha l'chatchila, which meant you go ahead and take the food from the fridge. You take it from the fridge, which is probably the most common thing that people have questions about, and you take it from the fridge, and you go ahead and put it on, what you can put it on, what you can't put it on, and all those details. I did want to clarify one thing people told me there was some unclarity about, in terms of the Shabbos oven. Right, the big misnomer of the Shabbos oven. So it's really not me. You can just go to the Starkey website and read exactly what I can read. They clarify very nicely here. But basically, they've made the very first one to say the Sabbath mode does not allow us to turn these appliances on or off during Shabbat. I think we know that. Then they say, thank you. Then they say that the Sabbath mode does not allow us to use these appliances completely at will on Shabbat or on Yom Tov. Rather, enable us to use these appliances within the guidelines of halacha. Thank you, that's very vague. Then it says, basically it just tells you what it does, right? There's two things. It's basically Sabbath mode and Sabbath compliant, but Sabbath mode will disable the automatic 12-hour shutoff. In many cases, this mode will prevent the light from going on and off as the door is opened and closed. Some models, however, the light has to still be unscrewed. No lights, digits, solenoids, fans, icons, tones, or displays will be activated. For these Sabbath mode models, the Sev temperature can be raised or lowered on Yom Tov, but not on Shabbat, for cooking purposes at any time. This is because there's a built-in delay between the request for temperature change and the actual implementation. So that's Sabbath mode. All Sabbath mode really means is that the gizmos, buttons, lights have been turned off for you, or you can turn them off with a code or holding this and that. And secondly, that on Yom Tov it's easier to use, but Sabbath mode does not mean press the button and use your oven at will on Shabbat, which hopefully we made clear last time. Then they're Sabbath compliant, which is kind of a step down, where basically the Star Case certifies some ovens as Sabbath compliant. They said the same basic features as Shabbos mode, except there's no delay built into the set temperature, which again is only really relevant on Yom Tov. So really it should be called Yom Tov mode. It's only helpful for Shabbat, again, if you're putting things in the oven fully cooked before Shabbat, and then you're taking them out on Shabbat. Answer Ronit's question from last week. Ronit asked a question. Let's say I put my fully cooked food in the oven, and now I want to go ahead and take it out of the oven, right? But I only want to take out, we said we have to take all the food out at the same time, because otherwise, if we take half the food out and close the door again, so then we've allowed cold air to rush into the oven, and the oven's probably going to turn on again, and then that heat is going to help us because it's continuing to heat food that's in the oven, as opposed to if you take all your food out of the oven and then the oven turns itself on, you could say, I didn't want it to do that and I don't care that it's doing that and I'm gaining no benefit from that because now the oven is heating nothing, right? So theoretically, yes, you turned on the oven, though it was indirect. However, you don't get any benefit from it, so it's much less problematic. If you, Ronit suggested perhaps, we also said maybe it's near a kemavasha that looks like cooking. I don't think that's such a problem if you don't put anything in. However, so you asked the question, can I partially close the door? Right, that was the question?
Yeah, that's what I was told to do, but I
don't. Right, say the oven's still on or the oven's off?
The oven is still on.
The oven is still on, but I don't fully close the door. Right, so maybe then you can argue. Yeah, so I discussed it with Masa, we didn't like that. I'm not gonna tell you there's gonna be no one who says that, There could be potentially someone who would be lenient. I don't totally understand the leniency, so I'm not going to try to explain it. I could get back to you if you really want me to try to figure it out. I can maybe know who to ask. But it's still the same thing. Now that the oven is partially closed, so the cold air is rushing in even more. So now the hot's going to have to turn on even more, and you are benefiting from it still because your food is still being heated. Now someone, if the oven is off, however, right, you set a timer to go off at 6:15 and you're eating at 6:25. So the oven is off, then you can open and close the door as much as you want, assuming there's no lights and buzzers and gizmos. Then you can take half the food out and close it in and have the residual heat that there continue to work, but there's no problem with the electricity or the heating element because it's off. Which is probably the same answer someone asked about. Well, maybe I don't think they're here. You asked that? Yeah, about the light? Yes, I think we were discussing about that. I think it's fine. I'm still surprised it works, but if you tell us it works, it works. Right? If you don't have the oven off and you just have the oven light on and using the light as a heat source, I don't think there's obviously no change to the temperature. The only question, can you say it's nira kemavashal? So just to define nira kemavashal, literally translates as looks like cooking. Someone asks, is that like Maris Ayin? Like it looks like you're eating not kosher, you go to the bathroom at McDonald's. It's not the same thing at all. It is a little bit of a confusing category of halacha, but in short, the prohibition, the rabbinic prohibition of nira kemavashal, of looking like cooking, that rhymes, is for yourself. It's not for your guests, like checking in on you in the kitchen, do you know what you're doing? It's for yourself to know whether or not, for yourself to be reminded, for yourself to be aware of, I'm doing something different on Shabbat. What I'm doing doesn't look like what I do on Tuesday, doesn't feel like I'm doing Tuesday. So even though if you have the light bulb in the oven on, you are opening the oven, putting things on, and closing the oven like you would do on Tuesday, the oven's off. So that would be, I think, a big enough difference. Big enough, really, hecker. Big enough symbol recognition technique that I think would be fine.
How is this all different than opening a refrigerator?
Yeah, so, right, exactly. So this is right. And someone asked at least about the front door for the air conditioning. Right. So I think it's the difference would be that ideally, so first of all, there are those who are strict. I don't want to tell you, there are those who are strict who can only open the fridge while it's on. I don't think that's the common practice, but I'm not going to tell. There are those who are strict because if it's already on, so you might be keeping it on longer, but you didn't turn it on. However, I think the common practice is you open it, you close it, and you try to do it quickly. Don't do it as, don't be crazy, but don't open it and stay there for 5 minutes. Oh, what do I want to eat? Kind of figure that out beforehand. But I think it's also that the food, obviously, you're getting benefit, quote unquote, because your food's staying cold. But I don't think it's as direct. Like, it's not heating it what you want right now. Okay, so if anyone wants to look at that, Starkey website, accessible to all. Moving on this week to Magi's, which means stirring. So I want to talk a little bit about stirring. So for example, you realize that the cholent is burning, or you realize the cholent is too liquidy, and you want to stir it. Or, I don't know what else you stir. What else do people stir?
Soup. Film.
What?
Maybe it forms a film on the top.
So you want to stir that away.
Right.
Okay, you stir the soup.
It could be for the same reason. If you have a thick soup and you think the bottom is burning, you're going to stir it around.
Okay. So you could ask, last time we talked about chazara, which is where you have the food on the heat source, and you have to have the five conditions, right? You have to have the heat source have a blef. You had to have it in mind that you wanted to return it. It had to stay very hot according to Sephardim, or just not cold according to Ashkenazim. You had to keep it in your hand. And what was the fifth one? Who remembers?
Have in mind.
You said that one. I don't know, they're all similar sounding. Okay, so you had these five conditions. We'll find them on page something.
This is more if you want to help yourself with some cholent. Take it off, you hold it.
Right, exactly. So you're going to take it off, and you are going to do all those things, right? You're going to have it. You need to have a blech. It has to be fully cooked. You kept it in your hand. You had in mind to put it back, and it was still warm or very hot if you're Sephardi. So you have to keep all these conditions. It's so much easier. Just let me serve myself some cholent from on the fire, or let me let me stir it on the fire. So, excuse me, we could avoid all the conditions if we just let you do that. But we don't let you do that, and that's why we have this condition. So why don't we let you stir? Let's start with, before we talk about serving, because serving is probably a lesser form of stirring. Why don't we let you just stir it on the fire? So that's already a Gemara and a Shulchan Aruch straight away. The Gemara talks about a case, basically, of a whole cooking process, you know, basically like a tag team effort of cooking. The Gemara says one person lit the fire, and one person put the pot on, and one person put the first ingredient in, and one person put the second ingredient in, and one person stirred it. And they said they all individually, independently violated the prohibition of cooking on Shabbat. Which comes, what comes out from there is that stirring itself is hastening, is furthering cooking, the cooking process, and therefore it is considered a full biblical prohibition of cooking if you stir. And therefore, we don't let you do that. Right? Even, and potentially, which is a little hard to understand, but there are potentially, even if it's fully cooked, normally we say if it's fully cooked, how can you, you can't cook it more. We talked about that last time, right? When you go from zero to machal ben drusai, right, that half edible level, or from half edible level to fully cooked, once it's fully cooked, it's fully cooked. But there could even be an argument, some say that once it's fully cooked, even the stirring, right, maybe you're making it better. So no go, whether rabbinic or biblical. We're not going to let you do that. One second. So we don't let you stir on the fire. Right? Then again, Avram says we don't let you stir on the fire. There are those who say you cannot even stir off the fire. So let's talk about on the fire for a second. So if you can't stir on the fire, we're also not going to let you serve from on the fire. Even though serving is different than stirring, we can understand why serving is a minor form of stirring, because obviously particles and chunks of food get moved around, especially if you're like, oh, I want the piece of chillin with the meat or the kishka, and you're like pushing this way and pushing that way and the other, so you end up, right, unintentionally stirring a little bit. So we don't let you do that on the fire, even if it's fully cooked, right? So basically, a good rule of thumb is don't do anything to the chillin pot while it's on the fire. I don't want to. I want to slightly retract something I said last week. Again, I think there's two ways of looking at this. But last week we talked about removing the lid, right? I mean, I think you asked that, or someone else asked that. Can you take the lid off and check it, right? For example, if you want to add water to it, which we'll get to tonight, or if you want to switch the lid for a flat cookie sheet, because that's going to be easier to put your kugel on top of instead of the domed lid. So, our Weinstock thought it would actually. It's even in that case. So I want to slightly retract what I said. He told me not to retract, but that it could be it's better, even in that simple case, to actually take the chillin pot off, have all those conditions in mind, take the lid off, put the cookie sheet back on, and then put it back on the fire. Why?
Sounds complicated.
Sounds complicated. Why? So, I'm probably allowed to go into why today, though, delay us too much, but... No, take it off.
Yeah, and then when you put the cookie sheet on top, what are you holding on to?
Right, so, yeah, so it helps if you have two people. Otherwise, you can hold on to it. No, you can rest it on the counter. You can definitely put it down on the counter and just keep your hand on it. So if you have one hand, you know, one hand take the lid off, one hand put the cookie sheet on, and two hands put it back on. It is a little bit of a bubble gun. And if you don't do it, I'm going to say it's fine. It's really fine.
What are you trying to avoid?
What are you trying to avoid? So, right, so again, so it's actually the same conversation about stirring. Some want to suggest that recovering a non-fully cooked item is definitely a very big problem, because if you cover something, you're hastening the cooking process, right? And therefore, that's considered really similar to stirring. You're hurrying up the cooking. So if you go ahead and switch the cover, it could be it's somewhat similar to stirring, and some people are worried about that. It could also be that the droplets of water, you know, this is less of a problem if you're switching tops. But let's say you're just lifting up the top, checking if it's cooked, and putting that top back on. Then you have the condensation of the water on the top, and now that water cools down pretty quickly because it's just a few drops. Now that drops are falling back into the pot. If the pot is not on the fire, as we'll see shortly, the pot is one level down as a cooking item, as a cooking mechanism, because it's no longer on the fire. Still considered a first vessel of Kli Rishon, but it's no longer Al Gabei Ha'esh, it's no longer on the fire. So it could be that's a little bit less of a problem. I'm not going to say you have to do this. It could be a good practice, could be a good, but if it's too much of a balagan, if you're home by yourself, if you're worried that you're going to forget and you're going to not hold on, it could be it's better just to do it on the fire, leave it up to your own judgment, but there's some who would say better to do better just as a rule, don't do anything with the pot on the fire. You don't do anything with the pot, first thing is take it off the fire. Now you don't end up stirring, it could lead to mixed dancing. So maybe, right, so that could be just a good policy. However, you know, for that, if it's just switching the top, it's just checking, maybe it's okay. But definitely stirring on the fire, a big no-no. So you want to take it off the fire, right? The problem, or serving on the fire is going to also be a no-no because it's like stirring. Now you want to, let's do the serving first. You want to try the cholent Friday night, right? You want to serve the cholent Friday night. So you're going to take it off the fire. You're going to serve it. You're going to then have all those conditions and put it back on. Again, one of those conditions is that you need to have a blech. So we spoke about that last week. If you're putting the cholent pot back, if you're putting it on a hot plate or on an actual blech on a fire, so that would not be a problem. But if you're putting the cholent pot, which most of us, I assume, do, back into the electric cholent pot thing, what do you call that thing?
The element, the
crock pot part. So then you're going to need a blech in there, right? Which is seemingly a little complicated, but we said we put tin foil in like this, or at the very least, cover the knob. Perhaps that's good enough. There are some who say this is kind of a weird contraption, it's not so good, but we're going to say that cover the knob, and put the tin foil like this, and you're going to be okay. So let's just finish one point. So you're going to take it off, you're going to have all these conditions, you've made the blech before Shabbat with the tin foil like this, and now you're going to go ahead and serve yourself the some cholent, put it back on, eat it, go to sleep, wonderful. If you want to take it off to stir it, so just to be honest, there are different opinions on this. It seems like the more strict opinion, which is probably more across the board, is that really you shouldn't even stir it off the fire because it's still a first vessel. And even though it's no longer on the fire, it's really not great to stir it even off the fire. To be honest, it's the Ramah, who's most of the Ashkenazi posuk, is even strict that you shouldn't even serve it, because serving is too much like even off the fire. He seems to hold, you should actually have to take the cholent pot, this just sounds like a disaster, and pour it. You can only pour it out into another vessel and then serve it from there. We're not strict like that. We serve from the cholent pot, unless, of course, that's not fancy enough for you. Then you're very religious and very fancy. Our tureen broke in the move, so now we're back to the chomp. We hadn't used it in 3 years, but we had it. So because there are all these stringencies, still we're going to say you could serve from the chomp pot off the fire, but you shouldn't stir. However, there is room to be lenient to stir the chomp pot off the fire in a case of need. What's a case of need? I guess you have to leave that up to you. If you take the cholent off and it's all watery, or there's all the oil on top, and you're like going to be very embarrassed and it looks gross, the real solution is just wait 3 minutes and somehow it all magically goes away. But it seems to be that there are enough people who say that you could stir off the fire in that case so that the cholent looks more normal when you bring it out to the table. Okay, there are a bunch of questions. Yeah.
Yeah. If I turn the cholent the other way,
right,
back over the hot plate, that, like, covering it, or
I think it's still better to cover it. It's obviously a step, but as we mentioned last week, the Gemara talks about, right, even sticking it with tea that uses like tar, so it's even better to like tape the knob maybe even twice to start, but you know, it's only a piece of tape, so I would still suggest taping it. It's an easy stringency.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
No problem.
We just put tape across the knob.
Okay, in terms of the blech, you're saying?
No, in terms of the heating element.
Right, you're saying, and then you're taking the pot in and out?
Well, the pot is covered in foil because of, I was told, a tatmana.
Okay, so we'll get that in a second. So, good, so you're covered.
But there's just one piece of tape across the knob, which says don't touch it.
That's fine.
Oh, that's what you were saying?
Yeah, I mean, it could be, maybe some people say put two, but yeah, that's fine.
But you're talking about covering the thing, I don't know.
No, tape, that would be fine, same thing, same idea. But there's a physical, so the Gemara seems to have a stringency that maybe if it's actually physically, I'm not going to say you have to weld it in. Maybe it's actually physically tough, but I think the point is that there's a sign, there's a reminder, there's a you go to touch the knob, don't touch, right. Yeah.
So, slightly different question.
Yeah.
You've got chicken that's not liquid on black, and you're black hat, you're sitting over whatever. Can you take a piece of chicken off while it's still in the black?
Yeah, so that's right. Yeah, I know. So that's not a problem, right. So you got your party, you have your schnitzel.
Right. So,
just to take a fork and stab the chicken and take it off?
No,
how else do you can get it off? If they take the whole tray off?
Why not?
I thought you couldn't touch anything.
No, so if it's like taking a piece of chicken, so there's nothing, if it's schnitzel, you know, you can't stir schnitzel, no. Right?
If it's, you know, a tiny bit of liquid, but enough, you can't really get it off, it's the same as
Say, like, if you have to start using a spoon, then let's take the whole tray off. But if you get it with a fork, you know, you're stirring with a fork. Okay, so that is about stirring. Okay. Moving on to chazara mitocho. We discussed the last case about returning it, and we said that it's very important that when we return it to a surface that's covered, meaning the fire is covered, either it's an electric hot plate, which we still suggested putting a piece of tinfoil on as a reminder, even though maybe it's not necessary, but it can't hurt. It's just tinfoil or an upside down pan. And if it's a blech, which would, again, most of us don't have gas, so we don't really have those here, but if you have gas, you have a classic blech like your booby had, then that's what enables you to go ahead and return something to the fire. However, there does seem to be a separate prohibition that the Gemara speaks about, and the Shulchan Aruch speaks about chazara mitocho, which literally means going ahead and putting something back inside, which could be one of the potential problems of an oven, right? We said an oven looks like cooking, but it's also inside. So the real place this comes up would be the chillin pot again. Last week someone mentioned that they have one of those chillin pots that's really not a pot. It's really just like an inch of rim, and that's why some rabbinic authorities are big fans of those, because you don't have any question of putting the pot inside if it's really just a flat heating surface with no walls. However, most of us have chillin pots with walls, and the heat is in the walls as well. And so the question is that a problem, right, to go ahead and put it back in? So the short answer is no. We get around the problem. Some argue for different reasons. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, it's only a problem to return something, quote unquote, inside if you have two options, right? In the medieval oven, they had like either they can go inside or on top, or right? So if you have two options, then you shouldn't choose the inside option. But we only have one option. It's a crock pot that goes inside. Others argue that Rav Cutler has something about how it's only a problem if most of your cooking on an average day would be inside, and probably use an oven and a stove equally, so maybe there's room for leniency there. But in short, we basically say it's not a problem. However, as Mark pointed out, if you have that lining of tinfoil, that very much helps you in this case, because even though obviously the tinfoil doesn't alleviate the fact that it's quote-unquote inside, nonetheless, you're still making a little bit of a differentiation here between the fire, the heat source, which is the metal, and your pot, and that can only help. Not necessarily obligatory, but it can only help. Okay, that's just kind of a side point. Moving on to Hatzmana. Hatzmana is a very interesting part of Hilchot Shabbat. Interesting because it just seems like it shouldn't really be a problem, but it could be. Hatzmana literally means to hide. But what it's talking about is wrapping, is basically hiding your pot by wrapping it, immersing it, trying to basically keep the heat in, right? In the Talmudic times, they're going ahead and taking their pot and burying it in the sand, right? In our times, much more taking your pot and burying it in blankets, right? So that is going to be a problem.
What blankets?
Those that are
sold in the shop. Yeah, you know, they say Shabbat on them. I don't really know why you have to pay three times as much to say Shabbat on it, right?
Blankets?
Towels, like, blankets, what do you call
it? It looks like a
cover.
It's like a
cover.
I've never seen anything.
Yeah, you like it. You just don't know
about that.
But I don't know if they sell them.
Why do they sell them?
They use them.
What?
They use them,
so we'll talk about it. Right, so in order for the wrapping to be a problem,
sorry.
Send you a picture. Google. In order for the wrapping to be a problem, it's basically very easy to avoid this problem. In order for the wrapping to be a problem, you have to do all four of the following things. Right? For the returning thing, you have to do all five to make yourself safe. Here, as long as you don't do one of these, you're in the clear. So for it to be a problem, it has to be a total enwrapment. Right? You have to literally like engulf the whole thing. It has to be in its original container, meaning a clean rishon. Once you've, if you've transferred the food to a secondary container, for example, you cooked your soup right on, in the pot, and then right before Shabbat, you transferred the soup to a tureen, and then you wrapped up the tureen. So that's fine. It's already a kli sheni. It's a secondary vessel. It's not a problem. It has to be your intention to, you're wrapping it to maintain heat, not that you're just covering it to keep out the bugs or to get your kids from not burning their hands by touching it, whatever other intention you might have. Your intention has to be to keep the heat in. And finally, there has to be direct contact between the blanket, the towel, the heat source, the wrapper, and the food or the pot. So,
yep. No.
So the pot would be, in this case, considered like the food. So, it's okay. So if you did, right, so if you did, you have to do all four of those in order for it to be a problem, right? So it's very easy to avoid this problem. So totally unwrapped in its original container that it was cooked in, your intention is to keep the heat in, and there's direct contact between the wrapping agent, blanket, and the pot, or the food.
The pot or the food?
Huh? No, for example, right? So I'll give you a different, all four of these would help you avoid the thing. First of all, you see people sometimes do this. I never really understood them why. Sometimes you see people like wrap up their urn in a towel. I don't really know why. I just buy a better urn. No, my mom always complains that urn's not hot enough. So if you see people do that. So if you literally wrap the whole urn, I don't think it would include the bottom, but if you wrap the top and the sides, so that's a problem. You can't do that. But an easy way to get around that would either be A, don't totally unwrap it, you know, unwrap like three sides. You have to leave enough open that if someone saw you doing that, they wouldn't be like, oh, you did it, you just missed a tiny spot. They'd be like, oh, if someone were to say like, oh, you did a terrible job wrapping this, then you're good. right? Another solution I saw in a book is like, again, this is all kind of odd, but if you put like a plate or a platter on top of the urn and then wrap the towel that way, so now you have an airspace between the towel and the urn, right? You've created like a...
Tent.
Yeah, exactly. So then that would also be okay, right? Like, or you could just buy a new urn. I don't know if you'll have to wrap the urns.
But this is, you're doing this on shop?
Oh, so good. So, let's take a step back. So there's actually two types of hatmana. In Hebrew, there's hatmana b'davar she'mosif hevel and hatmana b'davar she'ena mosif hevel, which basically means wrapping something which is increasing heat and wrapping something which is not increasing heat. So for example, an urn is obviously something which is increasing heat, right? The urn is electric. The Gemara is, we're going to get into the Gemara. The Gemara has terms of things that increase heat which don't increase heat, like...
How do you fully
No, I've seen people like they put the towel over and then they put like elastic bands around the towel trying to like...
Really? Be completely wrapped and have to go underneath.
No, so not underneath, I don't think it would count. I think that, even if you didn't do underneath, I still think it would be a problem.
Because underneath is not heating.
That's where the element is. Right. So in the urn case, I think like even if you didn't do just underneath, I still think this would be a problem. But let me say, before we get back to that, so if you're wrapping something, so this is the interesting part of Hatmana, one of the stringencies of it, if you're wrapping something which quote-unquote increases the heat, right, or is on the heat, meaning an urn would be a perfect example, then that's even a problem before Shabbat. Or, for example, people putting these blankets on top of their hot plates, where the hot plate is adding heat constantly, so that would actually be a problem before Shabbat as well. But again, only if you do it in a way that it's like, you know, fully wrapped. Often, it depends how you put the blankets. Honestly, if you put the blankets in a way that's fully wrapped, you have like a big fire hazard. Right? Those blankets freak me out. They're a bad idea. They're like, the blanket is like way too close. It's just like a bad idea. But if you're just like, you know, if you have your hot plate and then you have your food and then you have a blanket on top, but it's not coming over the sides at all, so that's okay. But if you start having the blanket come down the sides, so you know you can't see what's underneath it at all, then A, you have a fire hazard, and B, you have hatmana. So that's bad on both ends. Wrapping something that is not on the heat. For example, you have your soup pot, you boil it before Shabbat, before you light candles, you take the soup pot, and you put it on the counter, If you go ahead and wrap it up in a blanket really tight before Shabbat, that's fine. But you can't do, you wouldn't be able to do that after Shabbat. You know, you plan on doing it, but you go ahead and light candles, now you're out of luck. So
what if you turn the burner off but don't move it so it's still getting heat, like when the oven turns off, can you wrap that first?
Before Shabbat? I think so. I might burn the blanket, but yeah. Because it's not, I don't think that residual heat would be strong enough. We can't do that. Yeah.
But you can put food in the oven from before Shabbat. Turn the oven off before Shabbat starts, and then take the food out and in as many times as you want.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. Out of the oven. Yeah, but the oven is not a problem of Hatzmana. We mentioned this last week, and fully explained what its Hatzmana insulating problem was, because the oven is not wrapping the food. There's a lot of airspace between the food and the oven walls. So you're saying that the oven is off. Yeah. As long as there's no, you can put the food, I don't know why you would do that, but it could get cold very fast, no?
Let's say you left the food in the oven from before Shabbos, and then you want to take out something, but then your company was in,
right, so the food in the oven's off though, right?
Yeah.
It's off, yeah, it's off. It's fine. Yeah. I don't think it'll stay so hot, but it's off. Yeah, it's okay.
What's the thing that you need to do? Don't you like to remember you? Right before Shabbos, when it's on 3 to 1 week, and I can
just take it in and out and close the oven. Yeah, the oven's off. If no buttons and lights and things are dinging and buzzing.
So I was at someone's house where they put a spoon in the oven on Friday night so that it wouldn't get touched
by the oven. Right, so that. So when we have Tamana, yes, I don't think it's an issue about Tamana because it's not directly wrapped. But
you're saying you can't do it because
if the oven is on, was the oven on or off in that case?
I was just wondering if that's considered Tamana.
Right, yeah, I hear what you're saying, yeah. So I don't think it is. I don't think it's directly wrapped. I guess what they're doing is a stringency if you consider that wrapped. I don't think that's considered wrapped.
Sounds good.
If they want to be strict,
I'm not going to ask again.
I'm still confused about the
wrapping issue. What is happening that
So if, right, so again, so it's rabbinic. If we're talking about, if it's on the heat source, then you're helping it stay hot and heat up more. But again, you know, the water's fully cooked. Right, so I think that the way the thinking is, it's a gzera, right, it's a rabbinic decree. The problem before Shabbos is... it's a good question. I think what they're really, where the concern stems from is someone who's wrapping their food is obviously interested in their food staying hot, and they're going to go to wrap their food to keep it hot, then they're going to discover, oh, it's actually not hot enough to keep hot, and then they're going to come to heat it up, right?
You can say that about all the ways that we heat food up, it's not as hot as we like it to be.
So that's
on the left, on the hot plate, this, that.
And then you have a heat source to do that. Right! Listen, I'm not going to try to explain every gzera. We have the gzeras we have, we don't have the gzeras we don't have. But why is it a problem even before Shabbat? Okay, so the why, it's about to get into the why. Then you have to come to my chabur for the why's. This is just the what's. Every Tuesday, 8 o'clock. Our other good chaburs to choose from, you're all invited. So that's what basically we're saying is that if it's on a heat source, which in our case would either be wrapping the urn or putting that blanket over on the plata, if it's fully wrapped, right, and it's in the original container, and your intention is to keep it hot, and there's direct contact, that's a problem even before Shabbat. But in after Shabbat, it's a problem even if something is not on a heat source to take your soup that was sitting on your counter and now wrap it all around in a blanket, 360, would be a problem. So for example, some things, right, so you can't, we said you can't totally wrap the urn, just some examples. However, let's say you poured a cup of tea, right? And now you want to go ahead and, oh, the person's not ready to drink it, so you're going to cover it with a plate, with a napkin, that's fine, because the cup of tea is already a second vessel. So that's not a problem. Right? If, for example, once you want to put a lid on a pot, right, off the flame, that's not a problem because you're not putting the lid on the pot to keep the heat in, you're putting the lid on the pot so dirt and stuff doesn't get in the pot. And finally, there is a stringency, I'm not saying it's obligatory, but there is a stringency if you ever heard of people putting like tinfoil balls in their crock pot underneath the ceramic. You ever heard of anyone doing that? The reason people do that is because, again, it could be that the crock pot before the cholent before Shabbat is fully wrapped in heat. It's wrapped in heat on the bottom, heat on the sides. The obvious point against that is there's no heat on the top, right? It's not wrapped on the top. So that's really the way the leaning, why it's probably unnecessary. But some claim no, but it has a lid on the top, and that's quote unquote fully wrapped for it. So therefore, some suggest you should put tinfoil balls underneath the ceramic, and therefore you just pop it up a little, and then it's not fully wrapped because there's, you know, an inch or two around that is not covered by heat, and so therefore that would be a potential stringency. I'm not saying it's necessary, but if you hear people doing that, that's why they're doing it.
Did you say you can't put a popper on the top?
So if the it's off the fire and you're only covering it to keep the heat in,
yeah.
It could be problematic.
Like if I took my soup out of the oven on Friday night, mm-hmm. set it down on the counter, mm-hmm. open it up, serve it, and then something by 1 second, I can't recover it to keep
it. No, you're covering it to keep the dirt.
Really not. We're doing it, let's do it right. Leave it open a little.
I don't think so. I think you could cover it. Good. Still, that's like the normal way to treat the pot. So. Okay. Yeah, sure.
For example, for Shabbat dinner, we had soup.
Yeah.
And we served soup, we ate soup, and after I decided to keep the soup warm for lunch, for Saturday lunch.
Okay.
Can I put it in a hot plate and cover it with blanket, or I can't?
So you could put it, that's what we talked about. So you could.
For example, I served this soup for everyone.
Right, so you have to. So
and
you
just, I want to save the soup for
no, I understand. So you'd have to, so just first of all, just to review, in order to put it back on the hot plate, so if you have an electric hot plate with no buttons or things, so you should still have a blef, which means like you should have a before Shabbat, or I guess you could theoretically put it on then, a piece of tin foil on top of it, so that would be your blef, and then you'd have to have in mind the whole. You have to have the five conditions. You have to have in mind that you wanted to put it back on. Ideally, you should keep your hand on it while you're serving it to people. It shouldn't get too cold. So all those things. And then, yeah, then you could go ahead and put a blanket on as long as it's not fully unwrapped. As long as it's not like all the way down on all the sides.
Because I have to see this pot?
Yeah, you should, right. Right, so you just rest the blanket on top and that's fine. It's not fully covered.
That means I can use the same.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to liquids. Yeah.
You said that Atmana has advice like putting foil over a big chicken out Shabbos morning, and you want to cover the tin with foil, like pre-cut. Is there an issue of Atmana who cover the whole thing fully?
Right, so I think that's what
Ronita. Say to keep it a little bit open.
So I think that's what Ronita is asking about covering the pot. Right? That's probably the same thing.
So what I'm saying is that Avila, like you're taking the thing out,
you're taking it off.
You're taking it out of the fridge, you're putting it onto your hot plate, Shabbos morning.
Right.
You're covering it fully with foil.
Right.
I know some people.
Are you covering it before or after you put it on the left?
Maybe right before you put it on the left. Let's say like you buy like chicken nuggets that have the plastic covering on it, the plastic, so you're going to take off the box and put on foil and put it onto your left.
You're not going to fully cover it.
So I know like some people say there's an issue of fully wrapping it in the foil, you should leave it a little open.
In the corner, because of how it's mana. Because that would be fully covered.
That's very practical. I feel like.
Right.
We're all covering everything with foil.
We're
going to
cover
because
it's
damp. Well, not just chicken, about a couple.
Right. I hear what you're saying.
Don't you have to cover the sides to be fully covered?
So she's saying is no. The
food
is
in
the tin.
The tin itself.
The tin itself is only has amount to the food, but how tight
that's
is it?
That's not the first thing that.
I'm going to get back to you.
It's not the first thing.
What?
It's not the original thing.
It's not the original thing. It's well, it's good right now.
Right.
Is that considered clericia? That's what Martine's
saying.
Yeah, we were saying. We'll look into this. Never have a hamster says. So we'll have to get back to you. But okay, so the hour is getting late. Let's talk about liquids. Going back to the basics. Some of us are familiar. Some of us are not. in terms of the different levels of vessels, right? So we kind of hinted at this, now we'll get into it more nitty gritty, try to move a little more quickly. So Kli Rishon, first vessel, Al Gabei Esh, on the fire, right? That is your soup pot that is sitting on either the fire, or that is the soup pot that is sitting on the hot plate now. That is, you know, the most, the prime example of cooking, right? That pot can cook. Nothing should go into that pot. You should not, right? You can't go ahead and put anything in there. Even, right? So don't go ahead and put the noodles, the matzo balls you want to serve with the soup. Don't put them into that pot while it's on the plata or on the blech, right? Because you want them to heat up for 10 minutes before you serve them to the guest. Don't throw them in while it's on the fire, even though we say there's no cooking after cooking, right? Ein bishul achar bishul. So even though your matzo balls and your noodles have already been cooked, nonetheless, we know that that right now you don't have a blech. You can't go ahead and put them back in because there's no blech. You're putting them right in the food. So we don't put anything in that kind of pot, a first vessel on a fire. Don't put anything inside it, right? Okay, now you have the one step down would be now that first vessel off the fire. You took the chicken soup, you took it off the hot plate, now it's sitting on your counter. Still in the original vessel, still in the pot it was heated in, right? It's no longer on the fire. Nonetheless, we basically still treat it for all practical purposes as if it were on the fire, or the same stringency still. Don't put your noodles, don't put your matzo balls into that first vessel pot. I don't know if anyone does that. If they were in the whole time, then that's not a problem. But you're not going ahead and throwing them into that pot. You're not putting your salt into that pot. You tried a bit, right? You could serve from that pot, right? Or let's say you take your spoon, you dip it into the pot, you try the soup, no double dipping. The soup needs salt, and I don't want everyone, all the guests that put salt in themselves. We're still not. So in that case.
What does that mean, no double dipping? I'm sorry, I'm seriously asking you a question.
No, it's not about like germs, not a lot.
Oh, you say that if you serve with a spoon.
No, so I'm not there yet.
There's some liquid
salt. Right, it's not in the spoon. Right, we're not there. Oh, so Mark is making like common halachic. That's good. You're saying, so some argue that. Okay, changing topics for one second.
You need 12 plain spoons to go and serve each
one. No, actually, hold on, because we'll get there in a second. That's a good point. So we still basically say, don't go ahead and put the salt in the pot, even though it's off. Think about that for 10 seconds. Okay, I want to hold off on that. I'm going to get back to you about that. We'll have to get clarity if you could put this. Because the salt is cooked, right? Assuming salt is cooked. Right? I think salt is cooked.
Add hot water.
What?
Add hot water.
So can you add hot water into the pot? So. This is really the same question, right?
You just do it individually once you have.
Right, so for sure you could do that. I was saying, can you add hot water? No, you do that hot water into the pot. It's no longer on the fire, and if the water was already hot, it's hot water into hot water, so you could probably do that, yeah.
Also
the chon,
the same
thing. So great, so good, so great, good. So getting to the chon case also. Right, it's the same case, I agree, thank you. Good point. So yeah, you can definitely add the hot water.
But you can't definitely add salt? Because you're eating the salt. Is that the issue?
Yeah, but the salt is pre-cooked. The problem is that we... There you go. Okay, I'm going to get back with the salt. You could add the hot water. Now, so that's a first vessel which is no longer on the fire. The next step down is a secondary vessel. Very simply, you transfer the soup into a secondary vessel, whether that's a tureen, because you're very fancy, or you ladled it into a bowl. We get into a whole question, and then a third vessel would be a third vessel, right? Which comes up more when we're making tea and coffee, which we'll get to in one second. What Mark was pointing out is the whole question about the ladle. Does the ladle count as a vessel in between the pot and the bowl, because there could be extra leniencies for a third vessel, and then fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, they're all the same as third. There's a good question, if the ladle is going back and forth from pot to bowl, so what Mark was saying is that some are strict, right, there is potentially room to be strict, that if the ladle's going back and forth, you know, let's say the tiny bit of water inside that ladle, the soup is cooling down every time, I don't think we worry about that. So we wouldn't worry about that, but if some people want to argue the ladle is staying hot the whole time, it's really just an extension of the first vessel, and so the bowl would really only be a second vessel. Nonetheless, I think that we don't have to, it doesn't really play out practically, so we're not going to focus so much on that. Or this comes up, basically, this comes into the conversation of making tea, and remind me, we'll get back to the urns, I don't want to forget about adding cholent to the urn. Hot water to the cholent. Where basically this comes up, there's a big debate. Basically two camps, two schools of thought. One basically says that a second vessel, right, the Gemara says a second vessel doesn't cook. Now it's a little bit hard to understand, because scientifically, you could have a first vessel that you've taken off the fire and now has cooled down to the lowest level of the Yad Soledepo. Let's call it 110 degrees, right? And you could have a secondary vessel, which is the soup came off at 212, right? 212 degrees. You poured it into a secondary vessel, and now it's 180. And what I'm going to tell you is that that secondary vessel at 180 doesn't cook, and the first vessel at 110 does cook. It doesn't seem to compute. But what Tosfot and others argue is really about the state in which you're going, right? That the first vessel, the walls of the pot are still hot, and they were heated by a fire or by a heat source, and therefore we argue that it stays hot longer and it has the power to cook, as opposed to the second vessel, which the vessel itself is cold, and therefore it's actively cooling down the food, even though right now it's 180, it's quickly going down, and therefore we say it doesn't have the power to cook. And whether that's scientifically true or not, we don't really care about. Because obviously we know that's depending on what the vessel's made of, how long it's going to keep it hot for, it really could cook certain things, which is why we get into this. So basically, the general rule is that a second vessel can't cook, except we have this exception of kalei habishul, things that easily cook. And the problem is, we don't know exactly what those are. The Gemara lists a few different things, but basically, now we've lost, quote unquote, our tradition of what that is, and therefore we're basically strict for anything that's finely ground, anything that's thin and flaky, or anything that's soft and absorbent. So we're pretty strict across the board about in second vessels. So for example, we would be strict about, like, tea is the classic example, right? So tea leaves cook very easily, and therefore we would not make tea in a second vessel, right? So you take your cup, you put it under your urn on a regular day, then you go ahead and put your tea bag in, or maybe even put your tea bag in first, and the water hits directly as it flows from the first vessel, right, which we call pouring from the first vessel. It's even stronger than before it even hit the cold walls of the second vessel. We don't do that on Shabbat. So rather, the question, the big question becomes now, is a third vessel less strong than a second vessel, or is the second vessel everything after? Everyone agrees that after vessel 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 million are the same as 3, right? You can't get less than 3 itself. But the question is, is the category of a third vessel even exist, right? So some people say yes, and a third vessel is much less than a second vessel, and therefore, kli shlishi, you can go ahead and take the cup under the urn, fill it with water, pour that water into the third cup, to the second cup, which is the third vessel, put your tea bag in there. I think that's pretty standard. Probably most of us grew up with that, and I think that's what the community norm is and should be, and that's okay.
Instant coffee is the same.
So we'll get to instant coffee in 1 second. However, some argue that the whole idea of a third vessel is not really found in traditional sources, and therefore it's really no better than a second vessel, and therefore you really can't make tea at all on Shabbat, and that's why there's an idea of tea essence, which is basically you make the tea in concentrated water before Shabbat. I think that we could be lenient for the third vessel with tea. Instant coffee is a little bit different, because instant coffee is pre-cooked and then dehydrated. So, excuse me, we said there's no cooking after cooking, and therefore instant coffee you could probably do in a second vessel. But if it's no different, it can't hurt to do the third, but I think it's not a problem in the second, because it's already cooked.
You're saying... I usually use a sleep sheet for coffee.
Yeah, no, I don't think you need to. No, but I would say that you should not put the instant coffee in the mug before the water. Because
I don't really need a third.
You don't need a third for the instant coffee.
Yeah.
It's roasted already.
Right, it's pre-cooked. Yeah. I think it's more than roasted. Roasted is not, doesn't help, because roasted is roasted and not cooked. There's a difference. But regular coffee is roasted. Instant coffee is actually cooked and then dehydrated. So it's pre-cooked. So that's the story with tea.
Holidays, you can just put the tea bag in the
bottle. You don't have everything's good. Right, there's no worries.
So if you need cliche for tea, wouldn't that be the same?
Cliche for tea.
Sorry, wouldn't that be the same reason you can't put salt in soup?
So salt is pre-cooked also. And second of all, I think we're going to consider the soup bowl a third vessel, because the ladle counts as a second vessel.
But you can't. So you can put it in the bowl, but you can't put it in the pot. You were saying before it was like...
Right, the problem is if it's pre-cooked and it's no longer on the fire, I've got to think about it a little bit more. Two more things about liquids. What about pouring hot liquid into cold liquid or cold liquid into hot liquid? For example, you have your kid's hot soup, right? And then when you put the ice cube in, you want to put a little bit of cold water into the soup. Now that cold water is now going to go ahead and the whole soup, right? Let's say the soup was 150 degrees, and now you're going to put the ice cube in, but it's still going to be 120 degrees. It's going to stay above the ocelletis foe, so we all know that the cold water basically was cooked. It became hot. So nonetheless, kind of maybe against what we might have thought, we said it's okay. It's not a problem, because water, the Gemara already tells us that since it's in a cliche, you could never, ever, ever put an ice cube into the pot, but if you put the ice cube into the bowl, put the ice cube in a cliche, a second vessel, even if the final mixture is hotter than the ocelletis foe, nonetheless, we say it's fine, because once again, technically second vessels don't cook. They only cook things that are easily cooked, and the Gemara specifically says water is not, quote unquote, easily cooked, and so an ice cube would not, or water would not be a problem to go into a second vessel, even if the final result is hotter. On the flip side, let's say you want to put hot water into cold. You know, for example, you're very sensitive and you have some teal iodine and you don't live in Florida and the water coming out of your sink is freezing. So you're gonna go to the effort of taking a little bit of water from your urn and putting it into the teal iodine cup to then have lukewarm water to wash your hands with, right? Because you can't use hot water from the sink. So that is okay. Right, so well, basically, what we say is that if you pour hot water from an urn onto food, that's a problem, because it can't fully cook it, but it can cook the outer layer, a klipa of the food. So you couldn't go ahead and pour water from your urn onto your raw piece of chicken, I don't think you'd want to do that anyways, but that would quote-unquote cook the outer layer of the chicken, which is not allowed. However, we don't view liquid to liquid the same way, as is obvious. Right, hot water disappears into the cold water. There's no like solid state where you say, oh well, it cooked. It obviously physically cooked some molecules of water, but it happens so fast and all mixes together so fast. As long as the final result is less than the ocelletis foe, we allow you to add a little cold into hot,
a little hot
into cold.
What about freezing water on
making ice? Making ice. Yeah, I didn't research that for today. That's really nothing to do with Bishel. So therefore, I don't have to answer it. But the long story is it's potentially a rabbinic problem of creating, of molid, of other things. And get back to me.
The shaking?
Really the changing of form. The ice wasn't there. But then
aren't you changing the form from the ice?
Right, so that's fair, except they probably say you're bringing it back to its original form or something like this. It's not recognizable, right? I mentioned this last week also not related to cooking, but there is a stringency that if you're gonna, let's say, put out a bowl of ice for your guests and you're worried that ice is all gonna melt and become water, if you add a little bit of water into the bowl before you put all the ice cubes in it, then when the ice melts, it's all mixed with the regular water you put in, even if it's just a tiny bit. So that's not a problem because the ice cube is now gone in the whole soup mixture. It's not recognizable. As opposed to now you made water into ice, right? It's changed. So I'm not saying it's not okay, but it's different. One second, yeah?
Can you just address quickly how you would put hot water into challah?
Yeah, for sure, I want to get there. You have a different question?
The ice maker, you have to turn that off before Shabbos.
So the ice maker turned off before Shabbos is not, again, not a cooking issue, it's really an electrical issue. Definitely preferable, to turn it off, right? Otherwise, you kind of have to know your ice maker. You know, if you have 300 ice cubes and you take two, it doesn't make a difference, right? The machine doesn't realize they're gone unless you have a very, very fancy machine. What? Well, it's only if you have three. If you have 100, if you have 50 ice cubes in your ice maker and you take out 49 of them.
That's still indirect.
Not really.
It's kind of like when you open up the refrigerator door and close it. The loader's going to go.
Except 100% you know that it's going to happen.
What?
If you take all four, if you take all the ice out.
If you also put a lot of your refrigerator,
we don't know what's going
to happen. When you close it, eventually the loader will.
So it depends. There are, so to be honest with you, there are Shabbos mode fridges, right?
Right.
What?
My holiday.
Right. So if you have a Shabbos mode, I'm not going to lie to you, right? This whole fridge, we're trying to make it sound like such a simple thing. It's not such a simple thing, right? There are Shabbos mode fridges, and if you were purchasing a new fridge, it would definitely tell you to consider getting one, right? There's even bigger problems with fridges nowadays with their heating coils in the back, which defrost the thing. It's not so simple. And you know, like the fancy fridges have buttons that turn into Shabbos mode. Exactly. So, there you go. Yes, but I do want to get to the chillin' because that's very, very practical. And it's on the back of the sheet. Adding water to chillin', right? So again, you basically have two totally different schools of thought. We'll stick to the one Rabbi Weinstock likes, which is that so you have your chillin'. You realize that your chillin' is dry. So how do you realize it's dry? You took it off the flame. Again, it's kind of like the worst case scenario could be bad. Again, as we said before the first class, having your food fully cooked before Shabbat is always the best way to go. Because, right, let's say you start your, I know when I make my chillin', if I make it Friday morning, very often, you know, you make it at 9 a.m. or 6 a.m. Right. So if you make the chillin' at 6 a.m., often by 9 a.m., you're like, oh, there's no water left here at all, right? And because the beans and the rice and whatever sucked up all the water, and then you have to add more water. Now, if you made your chillin' at 4 p.m., and Shabbat came in at 6 p.m., right, that would be very bad. If at 6:30, you realize, oh, there's no water left here at all, because your chillin' is not half-cooked, probably. And then you're really out of luck. So definitely it's good for your food to be fully cooked. But let's say your food is fully cooked, and you come Shabbat morning, or you wake up in the middle of the night, and you're having nightmares about your chillin' being too dry, right? It's fully cooked. So, can you add more water to it? The answer is yes. But, what's the way to do it? So the first way, the way would be is, you take the chillin' out of the pot, right? So you need the five conditions again. You have that tinfoil lining, or you're going to knob covered, or both. You have in mind to go back. It's going to stay hot. You have it in your hand. Right, you got the whole all those five things. Then ideally you're gonna schlep the cholent to underneath the urn, and then you're gonna turn on the urn and let the water flow directly from the urn into the cholent. You do want to be careful. Exactly. So some machloket between some people like this. Okay, so I mean, right. So first of all, it might not fit, right? So then you have to start balancing the chillin' and the air and the right. So yeah. So ideally, if possible, let's say you have two people, right? You hold the chillin' pot, your spouse flips the urn on, right? And then also you're gonna be careful. You don't wanna get splashed. You don't wanna burn yourself. You also want to kind of be careful that the steam of the chillin' doesn't go right into your urn because that could make your urn fleishik. Some people are more concerned about that than others. Rabbi Weinstock was not particularly concerned about that, and so.
But you can't take from a cup.
So I would say ideally, you want to be able to put it right under the urn, keeping this fleishik thing in mind a little bit. The second option B, which maybe some people would say is preferable, some people say is worse, is to take a cup. You know, you take a fleishik measuring cup, a fleishik cup, put it under the urn with the crock pot again off the fire. You dump in the water, right? You don't stir, but you put it in. And then you put the cover back on and put it back on.
Why is that okay?
Why is it not okay? Meaning, you have hot, what? You have hot, you have hot water.
Chillin'.
What?
You're working on the chillin'.
The chillin's fully cooked.
Yes.
The water's fully cooked. So really all you're doing is we're allowed to change things from one bleth to the other. For example, let's say you have two hot plates, right? When at Rutgers, we have five hot plates on Shabbat, right? So if you have multiple...
Don't change it consistently.
If you have that's not a problem.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah, if you have multiple hot plates, as long as you've had the five conditions, you can go ahead and pick up your schnitzel and move it to the other one, right? It's not, why would you, I don't know why you do it, but it's not a problem. So here you have water, right? The water is hot, and now you're just putting the water from one heat source, the urn, to another heat source, the cholent pot. And the cholent is already fully cooked. So, right, so the problem is, some people say maybe it's a problem of stirring. Even if you don't stir it, some are worried that putting the water in and then putting the lid on is some sort of stirring, but if it's not on the fire, I think it's okay. There are others.
You can serve, but not stir.
You can always serve, and we said before that in a case of need, for example, it comes out and it looks liquidy and you're embarrassed, so then you could also stir not on the fire. Better not to, but if you do, we're not going to yell at you. We'll
smile.
So we're saying ideally you would do it directly from the urn, but if it's not going to work out, you're worried about the flesh sugar and you're worried about you don't have enough hands, it's not working, use the cup. So you're cooling off the water in the cup, but if you remember from last time, right, that was in Machlokas Ashkenazim and Sephardim, the Rama said one of the five conditions is that it has to just not be cold. So, right, the Rama said as long as it's not cold. So first of all, even according to Sephardim, yes, the water did cool off, but it's still hot. And according to Ashkenazim, it just has to not be cold. And it's definitely not cold. It's only in the cup for 10 seconds. Right? Now, maybe if you put like one drop, it would be a problem. But maybe you put an ounce, and you know, urn cup. I wouldn't like spend 3 minutes in there. But, you know, it's on the way.
Explain why the first one you said is ideal. That's
why from the urn?
Why directly rather than holding back.
Sorry, again? Why directly?
Why putting it directly from the urn to the pot is more ideal than the other way?
Than a cup? Because I guess because of the liquid, because of the liquid not cooling down, I guess.
I'm just putting it out there. Yeah. Hypothetically, we have a real urn, like a pot, that's probably like this high, and our urn, and I'm not even saying the steam, but when you put it in and it's a liquid, it flicks up, the chances of the plastic, I don't know what
that's
the
what
is,
say. It'll turn.
I'm saying not even the steam part, but it becomes flacious because
yeah, so I would try to drop it down a little bit. But how hot is steam? Cools down really fast.
I'm not saying steam, the flicking of the chillin comes up.
So right, so if it was like this far, it would probably be more problematic if it was like this far.
Say he's a cup.
I didn't say that. Okay, let me just run through. I asked Renee to print the sheet for me, so I have to look at it, and then we're done. Okay, so some practical questions just to summarize, and then happy to take any questions after everyone wants to leave. Leaves. What did you give me here? Maybe two pages? Okay, here. So, there's only another thing. So some questions that I thought of, or that maybe someone asked me, but I think I just thought about them. Let's say you forgot to plug in your urn before Shabbat, or you can't plug it in on Shabbat, sorry, you're wrong. But let's say you forgot to plug your urn and Shabbat is fast approaching, right? And you're like, I gotta light my candles, it's 12 minutes until sunset, I'm already 6 minutes late, I gotta light my candles, I forgot to plug in the urn. So ideally we plug the urn in, 45 minutes, half an hour before Shabbat. We want the water to be hot before Shabbat, but if you're in a case of need, don't hesitate to plug it in as long as it's before Shabbat, you're fine.
What's the case of need? I hate to ask.
You forgot to plug it in.
Not like a bullet or something
if you forgot, it shouldn't be on the checklist like plug it in, light candles. It should be like plug it in, shower, bathe the kids, then light candles. What? Yeah, I think so. Because they're not. Yeah, because we'll get into details later.
If you know your urn goes from boil to warm,
and
it takes, let's say, 15 minutes, should like my urn. While it's boiling, it says boil.
Yeah.
And then when it's hot,
it's
what it's
going to say. Yeah, but still, as we discussed the first time, on a Torah level, if you don't do anything, you didn't do anything. So on Shabbat, you didn't do anything. Okay. Right? You did it before Shabbat. And so the question is, what's the problem? So Moshe has like a problem. It's hard to understand what the problem is. It's really a different thing. What?
But that's sleeping on them flagging your children.
Problem is what?
They're cooking on Shabbos.
They're not cooking on Shabbos. Your urn is cooking on Shabbos. Last time I checked, your urn isn't Jewish.
But that's different than putting your children.
Maybe not. So the problem is, right, so we did say some people think you should put the chulent 5 minutes before on purpose. We said we didn't like that. The concern with the chulent is that you're going to stir it, you're going to turn it up. I'm referring to an urn that doesn't have any buttons. Most urns that I know don't have settings, right? Some of them have that Shabbat switch. Not really sure what that does. Right, but they don't have like 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. They have on or off. Once it's on there, you can't like stoke the coals. It's nothing to do. It's like a hot plate. You can't make it go on,
you
more
be
on.
Tempted to cover it.
Oh, and
that'd
be cool. Because most people aren't in a rush.
Yes, if you need that coffee.
There you go, right away. Yeah.
Let's say I light and it's not even 18 minutes yet, but then after I light, I realize I didn't plug in.
So that's a whole other question.
Yeah,
that's
I assume you're not allowed.
That's a whole question of accepting Shabbat.
Right, okay. You don't have it. Can I tell my husband directly? Hey,
yeah,
plug
so,
in the
yeah.
light.
So if it's not Shabbat for someone else, then it's not Shabbat
what
for someone else.
What if you pretend like candles to say, I have in mind that I have
no, that's a bad idea.
Just
if you're stuck. Okay, just some other questions that people ask. I definitely have more, something I got off stages. Okay, I think that's it. Happy to take any other questions.
About the
bleh.
The
bleh
and
yeah.
the timer.
Bleh and the timer. Highly recommended.
Highly recommended?
Yeah, highly recommended.
Okay, is there a difference if I put...
But what do you mean? I should clarify.
Okay, the bleh is at the timer. That means it turns off... After
turns off at 10 o'clock at night and turns back on at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Is there a difference if I put the food on the blech before it started or after? It doesn't matter.
So I'm not going to say it doesn't matter. You know what? I'm not going to answer that. I want to look. It never comes up for us. It's always on. There are some people talk about it, but again, you didn't do anything. Right? First of all, we're talking about fully cooked food.
Right.
So we're not talking about...
Right?
So some people want to like say like this. Can I put my soup from the fridge on the hot plate while it's off, and then it turns on from the timer? I didn't do it. That's already much more complicated. That doesn't sound good to me. But you're saying you want to put your schnitzel. So what's the difference? Yeah. So I'll triple check, but I didn't research it for today, so I don't want to give like a definitive answer. But I don't really see
the
problem.
The soup that you put on. Yeah. And it turns off at 10 o'clock at night and it doesn't turn off until 10 o'clock at night.
You get sick.
Huh?
You get sick.
But I'm saying we have to qualify that, so that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Or it's not a problem for some time.
Yeah, why would that
turn off?
Because it takes the soup all night to cool down and then the timer will
it's cold down. The timer is cold down.
Yeah, so that's what it, so, right, so let's say,
you just left it
so I don't want to answer that. I don't want to answer that on the spot.
Temperature thing anyhow and put it on.
Right, so I'm saying if you have a food that you would go ahead and put on the plata while it's on, I don't think it's a problem. If we're talking about liquids, then this gets into a little more complicated questions. But you're definitely going to keep it on the whole night, you're going to get sick.
I mean,
let's try it.
Yeah. Well, someone asked me about what about keeping a soup in a crock pot, right? You put the soup in the crock pot before Shabbat, and you do the whole day, and that's fine. That's like a chillin'. There's no difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could need to, this is the wrong class, but you don't use a dessert plate. You eat dessert on the same plate that you had your meat. Finish eating meat at 1:30, and then finish your dessert using the same fork and plate at 2. Do you count
that
however many hours till vary from
like
when you
get
your meat or what?
I think it's not. It's
funny
when you eat the meat.
What?
When you eat the meat.
Okay.
Eat the food.
Even if it's the same fork.
I mean, if your fork is covered in meat.